Hey, what's going on? It's DJ Hoppa, and I want to welcome you to A Tribe Called Dad. This upcoming episode is a real special one. For me personally, this is me sharing my thoughts around my fourth child being born, my second son being born. And I sat down with Seth from our team to really flush through what should expecting dads expect. So this is a remix of What to Expect When You're Expecting, A Tribe Called Dad edition, essentially. If you are an expecting dad, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, get a notepad out. Get ready, because I'm going to drop some of the things that were fresh on my mind. And this isn't about, you know, only when I had our first kid 9 years ago. I mean, this is super fresh. This is literally like 2 weeks ago. And I want to be able to share all of this information with other dads that are out there. By no means am I saying that this is the only way in any which way, but I think Seth and I really got a chance to flesh out some of these thoughts, some of these ideas. So if you are an expecting dad, you're in the right place. If that's not you, I know you know somebody who is an expecting dad, especially a first-time expecting dad. Pass them this episode. I hope that this really helps them. I hope this helps you. Thank you so much for being here. Let's jump into it. It's a tribe, yeah. A tribe called dad.
Tribe. A tribe called dad.
Hey everybody, welcome into A Tribe Called Dad. My name is DJ Hoppa, and this is a pretty unique episode. This is a very personal episode. I'm excited to share this though, because this is day 8 of my latest child being born. My son, my fourth kid, my second son, he was born 8 days ago. And so I felt like it might have been, this is a pretty important thing to try to document and to maybe try to pass along to all of you who are out there who are maybe expecting dads, and you want to know, like, what is it that I'm going to go through? What does this even look and feel like? I mean, it's still so fresh for me. So I've got Seth here. Seth is going to help moderate this and help extract all of these thoughts and help organize this a little bit for us here. But Seth, this has been such a surreal experience.
Yeah.
And it's something that has really, like, it sort of crept up on me, to be honest with you.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because this is your fourth child, right? So
right.
You've been through this four times, and I'm thinking about, you know, the dad that's like becoming a dad for the first time. And there's probably like two realities here. There's the reality of like, this is what it's like to do this for the first time. And then, hey, I'm stepping into this for the fourth time. So there's almost like two sides of that coin for you. I'm curious, like set the stage for us. There's probably like weeks and months that come before the actual birth. And I think you just, you know, completed this major milestone. Like, what is it? What are the marquee like lead up points to the actual event, take us to that lead up.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, if, you know, for anybody who is expecting, which I would expect that a majority of the people that would be listening to this episode are going to be expecting dads.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this incredible excitement, obviously, in the beginning of this. And it might be a combination of, you know, nervous, excited, scared, you know, all sorts of emotions that I think we all go through when you first find out that your partner's pregnant and that this is now the road that you're going to be on. And it's not a quick road. You know, I mean, this is a 9-month journey, essentially. And I think it's a bit different for us as men, because we don't actually go through as much in terms of like physical change. If anything, it's this, you know, psychological and emotional change that we sort of go through. And there's, you know, a lot of pressure, I think, for a lot of us as we sort of get closer and closer to that date. But it you know, sometimes it doesn't really feel so real because we're not yeah. experiencing those changes in our body, you know? So, and depending on, you know, how tapped in you are to like that day-to-day of those changes, it, you know, you can be a little aloof or a little distant, but, you know, I think some of the major milestones for me have always been, you know, those checkups with the baby, those like first ultrasound appointments, you know, hearing the baby's heartbeat, and then, you know, going to those doctor appointments and getting a chance to see, you know, to actually see the fetus that's growing inside and like just all of that stuff. It starts to feel a little bit more real, but
yeah,
you know, I mean, even this time around, man, this is the fourth time around. And I think out of all of them, I was the least prepared.
Huh. Wow.
I was the least prepared because it's one of those things where, you know, you start to get a bit comfortable after a while. And you're like, all right, well, look, I mean, this is the fourth time, you know, I mean, it's like showing up to work on the first day or, you know, week one at work versus like, you know, the fourth year of being at the same job or something like that. You show up differently. Yeah. Usually, you know, so for me, it was, you know, it's definitely this, what seems like a distant future initially. And then as the dates get closer and closer and you sort of see your partner get bigger and bigger and like you see this growing in, and it's absolutely visible that, you know, she's pregnant. It gets to a point, I think, right around, for us, it was like right around like 8 months or so. 7.5 months, 8 months, like 6 weeks out, essentially, where like my wife has had it. She's just like, I hate you for doing this to me. Like, I can't move my body. You know, I've got all this sort of pain going on. I'm uncomfortable. I'm hot. Like, I can't sleep right. Like, you know, just all of those things that are happening. And
yeah,
you know, all I can do is apologize for it and make sure, like, do you need anything? What can I get you? How can I make this easier?
Well, can we slow that down a sec? Because I think because you've done this four times and you may have done it, maybe you crash and burn a fourth time, but I'm curious, like, because it seems like there's some changing support needs, like for your wife and your, like, that's who's going through this, right? She has so much physical things happening, emotional, mental, and then there's the other three kids that are also still have the same needs they had, you know, before the pregnancy. So it's like, I'm almost wondering, like, you could just kind of evaluate and go, hey, what are some of the things that I think I did well, and maybe some of the things that, like, I if I had a fifth chance, I might change or shift, because I think those insights could be helpful for dads, whether it's their first or fifth kid, you know?
Yeah, it's a good point, especially for, you know, dads that are maybe not necessarily expecting their first child, but expecting their second, third, fourth, whatever child this is, because you're right. There's an additional layer or additional layers when it comes to now, you've got other young kids potentially to sort of tend to, and you're trying to prepare them as well, you know, especially, you know, our third child, my son Joe, he is almost two and a half so they're about 2.5 years apart.
Got it.
And so for him, you know, I mean, he gets all the attention right now for the most part, or prior to the baby coming. And so, you know, we're trying to prepare him for that as well, trying to, you know, make sure, I mean, there's just so much to do. There's like literally so much to do with just like regular life, with making sure that all the kids are good and like all of the responsibilities that my wife usually takes on. And now there's things that she just maybe can't physically even quite do. And
Was there something that you were like aware of this time around where you're like, hey, this is something I'm aware of and I want to be intentional about? Like, was there an intention that kind of like drove you in this experience at all?
Yeah, I think as it got closer, you know, I mean, I tried to take on more of the help with the kids. Yeah. You know, I changed up my schedule. I'm fortunate enough to be able to, you know, kind of dictate my own schedule to some degree. And so, you know, there are a few things in my schedule that are hard to move, but a lot of things in my schedule can be moved around. And so I found myself doing that. I found myself actually going to a much earlier start time in my day. to be able to get the things that I needed to get done when everybody else was sleeping.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's just a decent strategy for any dad, like moving forward. Like you almost have to find those pockets of time that you can, you know, rearrange so that you can have some like downtime without, you know, kids running around and all the stuff that goes on. So, I think that was one of the biggest ones. You know, this time too, one of the biggest differences for us is, and I know this might sound pretty cliche, we are incredibly fortunate to have my wife's family in close proximity on this pregnancy and like at this stage in our lives. So we moved to the city where my wife grew up. Like we are four doors down from my in-laws. We've got sisters around as well to be able to help. I mean, literally when it happened and my wife's water broke in the morning, one of her sisters, you know, rushed over from literally down the street, didn't have to get in a car, just like walked over to the house and allowed us to be able to, you know, do what we needed to do. So I think being able to create a support, to be able to create a support network, like as you get closer, is certainly helpful, especially when you have, you know, multiple kids.
That's so good. I think that some of the themes I'm hearing in that are like there's reinvention in time, right? Like, so it's like, hey, I'm reinventing how I see time, how I see my calendar. Like we've got a growing priority, you know, like in our home. Right. And so I've got to get out of a fixed schedule and into something that I can make malleable and move around.
Yeah.
So I love that. And then I also heard in there, it was almost like there was like, you were able to make room for a new priority, and that may cost you something. It may cost you maybe that deal that you wanted to close or whatever, or that next class you wanted to start with your business. Like there may be certain things that you just have to say, hey, I'm committed to not doing this in order to make room like in these last couple of months.
100%. And there's like some real tangible things that I've had to say no to, you know, I mean, and just to be able to stay close enough to home.
Yes.
You know, like from a super practical sense, you know, I blacked out literally like the 6 weeks leading up to the due date.
Yeah.
And it not like completely blacked out where I'm not doing anything, but, you know, no travel, no major commitments where like I'm saying yes to, you know, a gig that only I can be there for, you know, I'm just like, all the things to try to cover some bases. Yeah.
Yeah. That's huge. Like whether your wife acknowledged that or not, I think that's such a huge love offering, is to be like, I'm creating space like for this.
Yeah.
And then like the last thing I heard was like just bold requests. Like, it's like, hey, like family, like we want to invite you into this, right? There may, maybe if you don't have family nearby, there's neighbors or there's friends, but like being bold in what you need in order to create. It's almost because like in some ways, like your wife, she's thinking about some of that stuff, but she's got so many other things to think about. And like, she needs you to step in, I would imagine, and like advocate for her blind spots. Right. So it's like, so for you to be able to say no to some things, make some bold requests and get certain things in order, I would imagine that just creates an environment that's like really ripe for her to do the work she's got to do, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's a great point.
So that's like all the pre, right? And then I'm like 8 days ago, you were in a hospital, like the whole thing was happening, right?
Yeah.
And from what I remember, I have three daughters. So there's a whole like labor sequence, right? Where that could go very quickly. It could take forever, right? Like, and as it occurs to me, there's a role for the man, like the husband, like to be, there's something for, I would imagine there's ways that would be really helpful you show up, and then really ways that are not so helpful. Just curious, like what did you notice about that phase of the pre-birth?
Yeah. So, you know, for anybody who this is your first time and you're expecting your first child, you know, they show a lot of times in the movies where, you know, the woman's water breaks and it's just like this, it almost looks like a, you know, whatever, a water jug just got dropped on the floor or whatever. And it's just like, you know, you need a mop type of a thing. Mm-hmm. And our first two kids, that was not the case. Like the contractions just got stronger and closer. And my wife felt like it was time. And so we went into the hospital. And then, you know, they in the hospital would break her water in order, you know, like at some point they break the water and then that starts this whole, you know, process or whatever.
Well, hold on. When did you know to go to the hospital? Cause I make up, there's sort of like, there's stuff happening at the house and you're like, when do we get in the car? Like where did you learn that? Like,
I mean, I relied on my wife like for a lot of that. But I do remember like we did take a class. I took a class with our first one. Like with most classes, I remember and retain a percentage of that information. You know, but my wife was like, I feel like women have this intuition where they, you know, it's happening in their body. You know, I think it's our responsibility to be able to trust them with that intuition and for allowing them to lead us on what that is. And so instead of me being like, well, the book says, you know, like it's in that moment, it's like, hey, if you're feeling this, all right, let's go. You know, are you sure? Okay, cool. Let's go. Let's get in the car. And so for the first two, it was that. It was like the contractions were getting close together and you know, we were timing the contractions and I think they were like 4 minutes apart or something like that. And they were pretty strong. And so that's when we headed to the hospital. With one of my girls, they sent us back. And it was then another week and a half, which was torture. That part was so rough. That part, because we were all set. And then you get there and they're like, nope. Like go back home. And then like every day you're just like, is it today? Is it today? Is it happening today? Like, and so that part was that was a tough one. But with my third son, with Joe, my wife's water broke in the middle of the night. And she had never experienced that before. Like we had never experienced that together before. We didn't have any idea what to do. Like our initial reaction was like, oh my gosh, like we need to hurry because if this just happened, like we could be having the baby in the car. Like I don't know, right? In that moment we're, you know, rushing out the door. I remember we were actually staying about an hour from the hospital because we were staying overnight where my in-laws live and we were just visiting them. And then that night that happened. So we like had to rush back into LA. But it was in the middle of the night, so luckily there was no traffic. And so when we got there, everything was fine. This time, my wife's water breaks at 9 a.m. in the morning. Like she's sitting on the couch. All of a sudden, she's like, oh, I think my water just broke. I'm like, wait, what? And it wasn't, I don't know, it didn't seem as though it was as much as it was before. Like there was, it was definitely clear that her water had broken, but it wasn't what we woke up to in the middle of the night the time before. So we were kind of in less of a scurry to get out the door, but we're also still like, okay, this is something that we need to kind of move on now. And this time the hospital is like 10 minutes from our house. So we get,
Got some time, you got some time between when the water breaks and the baby. I mean, it's like, cause when I was hearing you tell the story and the worries, like, was it actually like a worry? Like we have to like,
no,
go 100 miles an hour in the car to get there.
Yeah, no. And that's what was in my mind. And I think like, you know, maybe that's what Hollywood portrays, or, I mean, there's certainly times where I'm sure like this happens because, you know, not every birth is the same at all. Like, and everybody has these different experiences, but yeah, my worry and my concern was like, man, this is going to happen. Like your water broke. That means you're going to give birth in the next 30 minutes. Like I need to hurry up and get you there, you know? So, but yeah, no, in reality, it still takes a lot of time. So in this case, this time around, her water breaks on the couch, 9 a.m. I call some family members that are close by. One of her sisters comes over, watches the kids. We're out the door. Actually, my two oldest ones are still in school. So they were in school at the time. I had just dropped them off at school. And then just my youngest at the time, Joe, is just around at the house. And so Yeah, we get to the hospital, and then it's a process. You know, I think we got admitted at we were probably admitted around 10:30. Got straight into a room, thankfully. I mean, it was a pretty smooth experience overall. We're now, you know, in the room, and now it's just the waiting game. They check her, and you know, in order for a woman to give birth naturally, vaginally, it needs, like, you need to have like a, what is it, a 10 centimeter, or like you need to be dilated to 10. I think it's centimeters.
Right. Yeah. There's certain stats that tell
10,
them
10 centimeters is like where you need to be, when like giving birth. And so my wife's at like a one when you get in there, you know, so her water's broken, but she's at a one. And so it's kind of like, all right, well, it might be a while. So we're going to sit here. But she's like continuing to have contractions and whatnot. So this is like a really interesting time frame. Like that time frame is really, really interesting. So I've got like,
and tell these guys, what's a contraction? Like demystify that.
So you know, her body is essentially like her uterus is like clenching, and her body is going through this, you know, where it's pretty painful, but it's like her body practicing pushing the baby out, essentially.
And it comes in waves. Yeah.
It comes in waves. Yeah. And so, you know, we're joking around, and all of a sudden, like, she tenses up and she's having a contraction, you know, and she's in a bit of pain for, you know, 5 to 15, 20 seconds. And then like, if it was a long one, and then it's good. And then another couple minutes, and we're just, you know, having conversations, and like that time frame though of being in the hospital is such an important one. And for our role, I think as men, in that space, like that is not the time to then be like, oh, okay, so nothing's happening right now, I'm going to go back to work.
Get on my phone.
I'm going to go back to work and call me when you think you're close, you know. Or like, you know, I'm going to jump on a Zoom call, since it doesn't seem like this is really happening quite yet. Like, I'm going to jump on a Zoom call and do that, you know. But you'll have some urges to do that, I think, especially for a lot of us that are, you know, entrepreneurial, you can work from anywhere. Like you're going to feel that pull. Like, oh man, I mean, we're just sitting here and we're just like watching horrible TV, right? Because you're in the hospital and there's like nothing to watch. You're like watching the regular channels or whatever. And there's going to be this like tempting pull to just like, okay, I'm going to pull up my laptop and just kind of do my own thing.
And that's such a great moment just to stop for a second, because there's a real choice, I think, in that moment. How does this moment occur to me? Like this section of the birth, does it occur to me as like a waste of time, or we have or boring, or does it occur to me as like I said, a waste of time? Or, and I think there's a choice there on like what you choose, how you choose to see it, right? Like,
oh, 100%.
Like, yeah. Imagine if this was like one of the most bonding experiences, like for you and your wife, like in the next 1 to 8 hours, as you know, everything gets set up and ready for the birth. Like,
I mean, I think it absolutely is. You know, I think like there's a lot of this, I think, is by design to some degree, you know, where this is a moment in which it's really just the two of you, you know, like nobody else is let into that room. Like, this is not a moment for, you know, everybody else to be around. And this is literally the calm before the storm. You know, and so, and everything will be different in a matter of hours, right? Like, after this moment, after you get through this particular milestone, it's now no longer just the two of you, you know, and especially if it's your first kid, like this is going to change everything. You know? So
I was even thinking too, it's like, it might even be where you build all the trust to go summit together, you know, because like in, you know, in a couple hours, you're going to be like, there's going to be an intense, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, whatever it is, where she's intensely laboring. And like, she doesn't want to have any doubt in your interest in being there at that point. So this is like where all the trust gets built in order to really thrive in that last kind of finish line.
Yeah, I think it's so important to be able to show up in that moment. Mm-hmm. I think the way that you, like your demeanor overall also is super important here. You know, I got some really great advice on my first kid, like on the eve of us giving birth, or us, you know, rushing to the hospital for baby number one. Mm. I had a friend of mine who's an older gentleman who's actually been on the podcast. Shout out to my friend Carlos here, who has four kids who are all now in their 20s and 30s and, you know, married and have kids of their own now and things like that. And I asked him, you know, there was this like desperation last little, like, this could happen at any moment. And he was over at my house and I'm just like, give me something. I need some sort of advice. And there were two things that he had said, and I've shared these before with lots of different dads, but the first one was to really show up for your wife in that room and to be fully present, to be her advocate, like, you know, be her voice, like for whatever she may need, and, you know, really demonstrate that type of leadership in the room. And I think like that's even true, you know, in that waiting time, you know, to be able to like take charge of that situation, but not like in an overbearing way. Right. Because I could see somebody taking that advice and going completely the opposite way of like what the intent is. Yeah. So, you know, really, she's the one who should be calling a majority of the shots. And then you're there to sort of back her up and advocate for her in those moments, and to just, you know, have a sense of calm about you as well.
Yeah.
You know, so that you're not freaking out.
Totally. I'm wondering for you, like in the hospital, like you did this four times, was there ever a moment where like a story where like there was an obvious need in the room, whether it was spoken or something you sensed, and it was like, you're like, I need to go advocate for the hospital staff, or I need to make a request of somebody like in the family, like, or was there anything where you're like, oh yeah, like this is my, because I imagine there's like heroic moments where you're just like, what it means to be an advocate is to really love somebody fiercely. Like you're like, I'm going to go get what you need. I'm here. That's why I'm here. Right. So was there any, like, anything that happened there for you?
A lot of it is like little stuff, you know, and thankfully we've had really smooth births for it's worth, you know what I mean? And I wish that upon every single person that's listening to this podcast, that you also have a seamless experience and that it's as smooth as it possibly can be. And we've been really fortunate and blessed in that particular way. However, there's like little things that maybe seem trivial, but that do make a difference. You know, like I went down to the 7-Eleven that was nearby to find like Pepcid, like an acid tablets that she felt like she needed. And, you know, she needed more ice in this water thing or whatever that like the nurse was bringing around. And like, we hadn't seen the nurse in a moment or whatever. And like little things like that, you know, are just like, I'm here, I'm with you, let me help you with whatever it is that you need, you know, without getting in the way.
Yeah. I don't know if this maybe doesn't seem like it applies to you, but I've also heard stories where like getting clear on the vision for the type of birth that you want and how you're going to direct the hospital staff to deliver the way you want to deliver can also be a huge thing, a huge way that guys can advocate, because, you know, you could go in like, hey, we want to have a vaginal natural birth. And then there, you know, the doctor is like, hey, I'm going on vacation. I need to get out of here. Like we're going to C-section this thing and we got to get the bed free, kind of a thing. And and it's like totally obliterates the longing and the desire you had for the way you want to birth. And so I think there's a, like, that's one thing I think that can be really helpful in the prep is sort of like getting clear, like, hey, what's our vision for this? Like, what am I advocating for? And like the hospital works for you. Like that's a huge shift, I think, sometimes for people, because if you go into something and you don't really know what you're doing and you're kind of like, tell me what to do here. Like they will, they'll put yeah, their they'll vision. They'll do their vision, right?
Yeah, like for the, sure they will.
And
yeah.
So I think that's a another.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's one of the things that I feel like I do remember from the class was, you know, creating a birthing plan. And you sit down with your partner and, you know, write out these are some of the things that we want to see happen.
Yeah.
I think at the same time, you know, there are times where your birthing plan, much like a DJ set, you know, you sort of have an intention to play these particular songs or do this particular thing. Mm-hmm. And then when you show up, it's a completely different scenario.
Yeah.
And the ability to pivot and to be able to not get too stuck on, you know, hey, but this was our plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important to be able to recognize when it might be safer or more favorable to be able to pivot in that moment. I just think that it's important that, you know, both people are on the same page. You
yes.
know, that like you and your partner are on the same page when it comes to that. The last thing that I think anybody needs or wants in this moment, like the worst case in my mind, it like, well, there's plenty of worser cases, but like one of the worst cases that could happen in that room is you get into a huge blowout argument.
Yeah.
In that room over something maybe somewhat trivial, you know? And I think the more that you can prep for that and
yeah.
sort of have some idea that where everybody's on the same page, but also just be, you know, a bit flexible when it comes to how things are going to go, the better off like everybody's going to be,
because yeah.
it's a high stress situation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you've mentioned a couple times, like, hey, the class you guys took, and
yeah.
I'm sure there's many birthing classes that are offered through the hospitals. Another one is called the Bradley Method. And I think it's like a 6 or 8 week course that you take, you know, in the first or second trimester. And it helps like really demystify what's going on. It's similar to this conversation. They help you walk through each of the stages to get you queued up and understanding the process, so you're not just bewildered. And then it also coaches the man on how to coach their wife, like through the actual experience. So
yeah.
If that's a helpful resource for anyone, that I found that we did that and it was really helpful to go, okay, I know what's going on in this space. Like I know how I'm supposed to be and how I'm committed to showing up. So
yeah. And I'm excited for us to talk more about that on future yeah. episodes as well. Like, I feel like that it requires, like, you know, we can do a deep dive on some of those, techniques and some of those things that are being taught in that.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think so. To me, the other part though that I would say in that waiting time frame is just being able to find things to do together, because it's kind of like being stuck in a cabin, you know, like snowed in a cabin, you know. It's like,
yeah.
All right, what do we do? We have to sit here and talk to each other or find things to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I, this wasn't necessarily a part of the like plan per se, but I have my whole VR project where you can DJ in VR and you can sort of see the world around you. So you get like full color pass through and like whatever, you can like see the environment that's going on, but you've got like superimposed DJ equipment that you can actually play on. So my wife and I basically built a DJ set routine while we were sitting there, and then
what?
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, and then and she was cool with it, obviously, and you know, that was definitely before things started to get, you know, more serious. But it allowed us to kind of focus on something together and to do
yeah.
this thing, and you know, now we've got this pretty unique, you know, content that we have from that moment.
Wow.
One of the other things I would say that's a pretty practical one, and I guess this is also part of like just the overall birthing plan for
mm-hmm.
us, we have a video for every kid that was born.
Mm.
Actually,
cool.
Except for, I don't know where Joe's is.
the third
that was different. That was in COVID, yeah. But the, so for me, you know, I've got my different tools and my different, you know, cameras and things like that, that I knew I wanted to have, and I'm charging things up. I'm like recording some sort of like on the hourly basis, kind of recording just off the phone of like how my
cool.
wife's feeling right now. And then, you know, the intent was always to like string this together as a video, And my girls love it. They watch their birthing videos like often.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And you know, it's done from a certain angle. So it's not, you know, it's not this like close up cam, like right there, like here comes the head. You know, it's not like, it's definitely more of like this over the shoulder moment that, you know, you can't really see anything that's going on, but then you see the baby come out, and be given to my wife. And she like, she then has, you know, her holding the baby for the first time, like on camera. And what I've done is, you know, I've gotten cameras and like, you know, things to be able to not have to worry about this stuff, you know? So instead of having to hold the phone and do all of that, you know, I've like gotten a tripod set up, like, you know, pretty like slick where it's not like super in the way. It's not this huge massive tripod, but like a, you know, something that's set up and I can sort of set it and forget it, you know? So when it was getting close and, you know, she's starting to, like the labor's getting really intense and we're getting closer, I'm just like double checking that everything, you know, I've got batteries on everything.
Sure.
Like I've got enough, you know, memory on things. Okay, great. And then things are positioned right. Okay, great. And, you know, to me, that ends up becoming a part of my role.
Mm.
And my wife, you know, I think in the moment, if I were to ask my wife, like, hey, so do you want me to set this thing up? She'd be like, no, wait, what? Forget about it. No, we need to do this. Like, don't worry about that. But trust me, like later on down the road, like it's like such a nice thing to have.
That's really cool.
And to be able to have those moments, you know, for the family.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like we have like, you know, photo books of kind of the birth and different things, and the kids, they just love looking at their birth story. And, you know, cause it's not only special, obviously, for you guys to capture, but you know, when your kid is their identity, they're growing up and their identity is forming, like for them to have that time capsule of like, dude, you were a big thing. You were special. Like when you came into this world, like that's such a gift. I love that. So take us to, so like you've, all the labors happen, right? And then like things start changing, right?
Things
like,
get really intense.
Yeah.
Like, things get really, really intense. And so my wife, she wanted to do this one all natural and didn't want to have an epidural, which is like the shot that they put in your spine that helps with the pain. Yep. And she had an epidural with the first three. And she feels like it screwed up her back like afterwards. And so she was pretty insistent on, I don't want to have an epidural, but she was freaked out about not having it because it, you know, it obviously manages quite a lot of your pain.
Yeah.
So as it was getting closer, what they end up doing, so, and this is a term too, that, like, I love that we're actually throwing out some of these actual terms because I wouldn't remember these, like, probably 4 weeks from now, I'm going to forget all of these terms. So this is actually really good that we're capturing.
And Hapa, like I said, this is so, these terms are so good because it demystifies what you're going into, right? It's like, when I know what's going on, that whole layer of fear just subsides so much more when you got a sense for what's going on. So
we almost need a cheat sheet also that I might like just put together that while it's fresh with just like a couple glossary terms in layman's terms, you know, in a Tribe Called Dad terms.
Yeah.
So they start giving her something called Pitocin, and the Pitocin is given through IV. And what the Pitocin is meant to do is to speed up the dilation process. So
the 1 to 10.
Yeah, that 1 to 10. She needs to get, like, this thing needs to get moving. And at this point, it was already probably, we were in there for probably 6 hours at this point before she starts getting like the dosage of Pitocin and this thing starts to really start to move. So 6 hours, you know, we're hanging out, we're watching shows and movies on Netflix and different things, and we're recording VR content. Everything is like really light. We're calling family, you know, we're doing sort of like that stuff. It's really, really lightweight. And then, you know, and every couple of minutes she's having a contraction and some are bigger than others, but it's nothing that's unmanageable. And then once the Pitocin kicks in and things start really, you know, moving along, it starts to get really intense. And towards the end there, probably the 2 hours leading up to her actually giving birth, I mean, the contractions were like white knuckle gripping the bed, like screaming contractions. And I'm not saying this to scare anybody, but like, that's very possible that that's what goes down. And obviously everybody's got a different threshold for pain. My wife's got an incredibly high threshold for pain. And so to see her in that type of pain, I knew it was, you know, something real was going on. And the tough part is there's nothing you can do. Like there's literally nothing that, that we can do, at that point, you know? So, there is one thing that my wife was able to take, and they would put it into the IV, was they would give her a bit of morphine if she needed it, but they could only give a certain amount, you know, per 3 hour time frame or whatnot. So
yeah,
and the morphine, I mean, it sort of took a little bit of the edge off, but it doesn't do nearly what it what the epidural would have done, like in terms of pain management. So
yeah, just one thought, like you said, hey, there's nothing I can do in that moment. And I resonate with that. And but then I'm wondering, like who can you be in that moment? Right. Like sure. I make up there's like a way you exist in the room or a way you exist for her. I'm wondering if like you could describe like who are you like in that moment? Does that make sense?
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you are the ultimate support that's just there, like just the physical presence, and being there, is, I think, comforting, you know, to know that you're not alone in going through this pain and that there's, you know, somebody that you love, that loves you, that's in that room with you. I shouldn't say that I was doing nothing, because I think in that moment too, a big part of what I was doing and, you know, kind of throughout the entire process, I'm praying for her as as this is happening, you know, like as she's going through these contractions, like I'm praying through those contractions and, you know, calling upon our higher power, you know, to be able to make sure that she's protected and that, you know, it's something that she can bear. But it's concerning. It's, you know, I mean, I'll call it what it is. It's scary. You know, it's scary to see somebody go through that type of pain. And there's times where she was even saying to me, she's like, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
And in those moments, you know, I mean, I can't take your place. Like there's like, I can't step in and take your place. Like this is something that I can just only encourage you and like, you totally can do this. Like you're doing it. Like you are doing it right now. Like, and you're almost there. Like we are almost there. This is, we're getting to the end of this. Like we'll get through it. We're here. Let's go. Yeah. But yeah, it's tough. You know, it's tough have those moments.
Yeah. I like what I hear in that is like your way of being is like I am encourager. I am hope. Like I am support like you've never seen before, right? Like, it's like, these are all like you can't point to these things, but it's sort of like, this is who I am like for you in this space. And that's gotta be so like reassuring, like in the midst of the worst pain of your life.
I mean, she ended up telling me when we were all done, you know, and after the baby had come, she was like, she was just so thankful and grateful for me being there and being able to help her through that. And she was like, I felt your prayers as this was happening. And so, yeah, there's definitely things that we can do, you know, but there's, you know, a limit to what it is that we can do as well. You know, I think one of the worst mistakes that any of us could make in that moment is to either like push somebody too hard or just like just not be supportive in some type of way, or you know, encourage her to give up. You know, like that's not the way either, you know. So it becomes this really triumphant moment too. You know, like you're right, it's like you're climbing Mount Everest, you know, and it's like you're getting closer and closer and closer to the top of this mountain. And at this point, you can pretty much see it,
yeah.
you know, but at the same time, like that's where it's the toughest because that's where the air is the thinnest. Like that's when you're the most tired, you're exhausted, you've like, you're mentally drained, you're psychologically drained and physically drained. And it's like, you're right at the end of that. And yet there's such a major payoff on the other side of it.
Yeah. We'll talk about that, man. Like when, like, at some point it's like we start getting signs like, hey, we're seeing the baby's head, right? There's visual things happening. And like, yeah, just talk about what your experience was like when your baby boy came up.
I think there's the lead up right up to that, which is you start to see the nurses and doctors and you sort of like, I'm watching their body language. I mean, they see this all the time. So I'm, you know, sort of looking for cues from them also to sort of be like, okay, is this, are we on track here? Is anything wrong? Like, I'm just, you know, and unspoken, you know, I'm just kind of like watching their body language and sort of seeing how they're reacting to certain things. And one nurse in particular was being extra supportive in the room and was like a real help, but she was also, you could tell, like, you know, she was a bit older. She's probably been doing this for 30 years or whatever, you know, and it's like she's seen almost everything. And, you know, I start to see her her shift a little bit, like, okay, this is getting close.
Yeah.
And so when that starts to happen, she's like then going and grabbing the doctor. Doctor's coming in, like all of these things are starting to happen. They're prepping the things. They're like, then they start wheeling in, they start wheeling in all sorts of stuff, you know, or like starting to bring things closer and like changing the bed and getting the stirrups up on the bed and like moving you know, all the tools and stuff that are like on a table and like, you know, it's crazy. Like the amount of stuff, I don't even know what all of it is or does. But there definitely is a shift where it's like, okay, now this is happening.
Yeah.
And now at that moment, you're like, okay, what's going through my mind is, all right, we are real close now. And then now is this last part essentially is the woman pushing and pushing this baby out into the world. Everything else has been prepped for this moment, you know. So this last moment though, that pushing part, you know, it just depends, right? Like everybody's different when it comes to that. Our first one, I think it was, I mean, with all the kids, my wife, like, I feel like it was no more than like three pushes for all of those kids. But with Zion, with the new one just now, it was like one push and his head was basically out, and then one last push and his body was out.
Wow.
But it's this like really, you know, it really is this crescendo moment. So it's not as though it like calms down before that moment. Like it just gets more and more and more and more intense. I mean, to the point where, and this is just from, you know, my wife even telling me this, where it just feels like you can't hold them in anymore.
Wow.
It's just like, I cannot hold this baby in anymore. It's got to happen right now. And this is coming now. So, I mean, in total, that little pushing part was like 2 minutes. I mean, I have it on camera. It's like 2 minutes, like 2 minutes or something, you know, it fits in an Instagram reel like that, like raw, you know, just that part. And, you know, I think that is just this incredible moment. Baby comes out, and it never gets old, man. I mean, this is the fourth one, and, I don't even have the words for it. It's completely surreal.
Yeah.
You see this like alien looking baby come out and, you know, it's attached with the umbilical cord, and you know, it's like covered in stuff, and you know, it's like they kind of clean up the baby a little bit and then put the baby on my wife, and it's this incredible triumphant moment for everybody in the room. I mean, like, I don't know if there's a I guess like you know, for anybody who's a sports fan, it's literally like the moment that that happens where like the team wins the championship and literally like the horn sounds and the team wins the championship. And it's like, whatever, a last minute touchdown or whatever, like a buzzer beater shot that goes in. It's like, it's that type of moment. Yeah. And even more so, it's like, you know, in sports, you usually have a stadium that is filled with, you know, fans from both sides, right? So usually there's some disappointment like involved in that too, that's kind of in the air. This is like every person in the room has contributed to this triumphant moment. And it's just the most incredible feeling. Like everybody's smiling ear to ear. Like people are, you know, emotional, you know, and also just like this sense of relief. Everything has gone well, you know, because there's so many things. It truly is a miracle, man. I mean, there's when you really stop and think about it, so many things have to go right in order for this to happen. And again, you know, I feel really blessed to even be able to say this because we've had these pregnancies with a majority of green lights. Like, I mean, everything has been, you know, green. And that's not always the case for people. And so, you know, and then even then, even if you've got like some yellow lights and at the end of that, there's, you know, the green light and this child comes into the world. And even if that child was born prematurely or whatever the case might've been, like the fact that that person made it into this world is still a miracle in and of itself, you know? So, it's just this like huge, like celebratory moment and, and there's stuff. Yeah.
I was gonna say, there's nobody that your wife would rather do it with either than you, you know, like, so it's such a bonding moment between the both of you. And, gosh, yeah. Like I just remember, you know, and I would even just say, take your time, like really, you know, the hospital might want to like move things along or whatever, but like, you know, really sit in it and like get, like really absorb the fullness of it. Cause it is, it's such a bonding moment. There's all sorts of chemicals that are happening that are bonding you and your wife together, like in that moment. And like so many, like all the dopamine and serotonin and all that stuff's happening. So it's like really just enjoy the heck out of it. Like, cause you only get a couple of those shots, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then there's like, you know, all of the formalities of things. Like the doctor asked me if I wanted to cut the cord and essentially put the scissors in my hand. I wasn't planning on it, but you know, put the scissors in my hand. So I cut the cord. And that's sort of a bit of a ritual or a rite of passage to some degree for some people, you know. I can't remember if I cut the cord with all my kids. You know, I definitely did with this one. And
that's cool.
And it doesn't hurt them. It's a little freaky at first because, you know, I mean, it's just such a crazy thing, you know, to even think about. It's like this human was growing inside of my wife and, you know, was attached with this cord. And I'm like cutting this cord. Yeah, it's just bizarre, you know. And then they weigh the baby, you know, they weigh the baby, they get the measurements, they do all that stuff. You're in the room while all of that is happening. You know, they clean the baby up. They, you know, give the baby back to, they gave the baby back to my wife for her to, you know, be able to have the, like the skin to skin time with him. And then they move us out of that room, you know, and then we sort of like get all of our stuff, move to another room. I will say this about this particular hospital and just in terms of preparation for dads, like when it comes to this process, for the other three kids, I was absolutely like, you get the dad treatment in the sense that like, here's a cot to sleep on, or here's like a recliner chair that like folds back enough for you to like be able to catch some Z's in, but like you're not the priority and you shouldn't necessarily be, right? Like your wife is and the baby is, and you're the third on the list, you know, but But the this hospital, I actually had my own bed, like my own.
Wow.
Hospital. Yeah, I know. I was like, this is awesome.
Cool.
That was the first time. And so, and then they bring the baby, you know, back in, and usually they'll give the baby a bath, and there's all these other moments. So like, you know, what else is happening? And I don't know if this probably requires some explanation, but like, you know, a major event has just happened for your wife or, you know, your partner. Mm-hmm. And this baby has just come out of her, and there's all of this stuff that requires cleanup and requires, you know, some stitching up of things and like some cleaning up of like situations and the removal of the placenta and all this stuff that's like sort of happening.
Yeah.
And that takes some time. So while that's all happening, I'm like with the other nurse and the baby who's getting weighed and measured and doing all of that stuff. I don't necessarily need to be there for her getting this, all of this happening anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, like at this point I've stopped like recording video and all of that. And, you know, I am grabbing some photos though of like, you know, him being weighed for the first time and him being measured and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, those end up being a lot of the first pictures that are shared.
Yeah,
a lot of those pictures. And so, yeah, I think, you know, your wife's not going to be able to do it. You know, she's literally in a bed, like getting worked on. So she's not going to be able to like, hold on, let me get my phone out and take a picture of this moment that's happening. Yeah. So I do think that that's also the responsibility of the dad as well in that time frame.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, man, I mean, like, you know, look, there's a lot of the postpartum stuff, there's just like a lot of stuff that happens. Like there's, you know, you know, the first breastfeeding moment, should that be the route that, you know, you end up going, there's that whole experience. You know, in a lot of cases they bring in somebody who's like a lactation consultant that's like talking to the mom and like helping them through that. And sometimes like there's just this constant in and out of people in that hospital room. And then now this person's coming in and like, we need all this information for a birth certificate. And, you know, this person comes in and is talking about the insurance stuff, or, you know, now the pediatrician that is assigned to the child is like coming in and checking and all the stuff that's actually happening. So,
to me, that's a great, like, that's where you get to shine as a dad. You're like, hey, I'm the front office here. I get to manage all this, right? Like we're ready for that or we're not. I mean, I keep kind of like saying that, but really you are the front office. So like you get to decide, and maybe I'm speaking out of my butt here because like that wasn't our, we weren't at hospitals, but like you, but I would imagine, Hapa, there's a certain like authority or a certain like direction that you could have in space, right? Like,
yeah, it's tough. Like I will say this, and this is something that I think is worth noting for all of our listeners, which would be, they don't come to the dad first. Like they're gonna go around you.
Wow.
First, like they're gonna go directly, they're gonna beeline to the mom for everything. And in a lot of cases I feel like the dad is treated as though they're just the accessory or they're just there.
Interesting.
And so I think it's important, if you want to play a role, that you insert yourself within reason and that you're proactive about doing that.
That's great advice.
Because they will treat it as though you're not even there.
Wow. Huh.
Like it, because the mom is essentially the patient. And the mom and the baby are the patients, and then you're just the help, you know. So it's actually treated more like, not necessarily from the hospital perspective, in my opinion, in my experiences, it's been less of, oh, you're the front office, you're the secretary, you're who I come to first to then be able to get approval to speak to your wife or to do these things. And it's more like you're the janitor, or you're the person who's just around.
Yeah.
And it's really bizarre, but that's the way that it is. And you kind of have to find your space in it. And to also, like, I remember in, like, the first time around, I got a little offended by it. Because it, and then certain people were a little bit pushy with certain things. Yeah. And some people have better bedside manners than others, you know? And those are times, though, that you're absolutely right. Those are times where you can step up and play a role and provide value in those situations.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And I think that's a great, like, vision check-in. Like, what's our vision for our birth plan? Because if you really want to play a role and want to have a say, or just even want to have specific roles that, like, are meaningful to you, like, I think going back to that making bold requests, it's like, hey, like, there might be opportunities for you to train the hospital staff on how you want them to see you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if you have a vision for how you want to be seen in that room, like, that's like I would invite people to actually get clear on that and speak it and say, hey, here's how I want to be seen. Here's how I want to participate. Right. Like, and I wonder if people might actually treat you different, you know, like in that space.
I think they would. And I think, I mean, you know, for the most part, and I think, you know, keep in mind too, that there are shift changes, you know,
you
basically have to reestablish that with every shift change.
Gotcha. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Wow, man. Dang. That dude, thank you so much for breaking that down. Like, because it's, like I said, it just demystifies so much, and it helps dads, like, just really feel really equipped to step into those spaces. I'm curious, like, you've been out of the hospital 8 days, as a final word, like, what's that week, like, right after the birth? What's that like? What advice would you give to dads that are, like, stepping into support, stepping into,
really
welcoming a new baby into the house? What's that world like?
Yeah, I think, you know, it should be an extension of what your role was in the hospital as well, you know, and really try to be around for as much as possible. You know, I've really tried to minimize the things that I've had to do, you know, work-wise, and whatnot. I've put on vacation responders on, you know, all of my emails, and just, like, really tried to take some of this time to, like, acclimate, and, you know, be around for all of these moments. And, you know, there's a lot of, I think one of the biggest, like, stereotypes that we throw out there is that, you know, but you don't sleep, and it's this, like, constant, you're not sleeping. And that doesn't necessarily always have to be the case. I mean, it definitely is interrupted sleep, but, you know, with a newborn, they're sleeping a lot too. You know, they're waking up and feeding every couple of hours, but they are sleeping. And so it's not going to be, sleep is not what you, like, sort of expect it to be, or that kid coming. So it's not going to be like, oh, I'm going to get my solid 8 hours of sleep uninterrupted, but you still might be able to get 8 hours of sleep, but it would be, you know, an hour here, 2 hours here, 4 hours here, you know, an hour here. It's going to be really sort of mixed up, and your schedules are going to be kind of thrown off to some degree.
Yeah.
That's okay. Like, I think be okay with that part of it, because this is just for this period of time. It's not always going to be like this, you know? But you have to be able to adjust to that, because these babies, they're so small. Like, they can't, it's not like they can feed on a full meal and then be good for, you know, 12 hours and be able to sleep for 12 hours. That's just not what they can handle. So, it's just unrealistic to try to think that way. But it also is a little bit of a mindset shift, is like, if you come into this being like, oh my gosh, I'm just dreading the no sleep thing, then it's going to be horrible. You know, you're going to run yourself ragged, because you're going to, you know, try to still squeeze in your 8-12 hour day. You're then going to come home, you're going to try to, like, unwind, or you're still at home or whatever it is, and you've just, like, had this crazy day, and then now you're trying to get some sleep and you can't, you know, and it's just unrealistic. So you have to be able to shift your overall like schedule, I think, in order to make that work to some degree.
Yeah.
As much as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Having that paternity leave, and then if you can get it, and then also just requests from family and friends, like, hey, can you take the kids, you know, when you've got more than one kid. So huge. So that, like you said, you can take naps and kind of stay vital through the whole thing.
Yeah,
man. Oh, this is so good. Any last thoughts or bits of wisdom that you're like, gosh, I'd love to just give this to new.
Document the process, you know, like, and really document it in all ways. You know, I've been journaling through this. You know, I was calling you, like, saying like, hey, we got to record this as a podcast episode, you know, which is a form of me documenting this process as well.
Yeah.
You know, lots of photos, lots of videos, because you are going to want to be able to look back on all of this stuff, and it happens so fast. Like, you close your eyes and all of a sudden your kids too, you know. And that first year in particular, especially for, you know, your first kid, but keep that same energy and wanting to document, like, even for, you know, kid two, kid three, kid four. Because I know we went crazy on our first kid, and like, everything was, you know, I've got organized folders by months, like, with photos and videos and all this stuff that's, like, been archived. And then, you know, for Joe, for kid number three, I mean, I've got some stuff that's been tossed in some folders, but it's a bit less, I put a little less energy into it. Yeah. And I think, you know, I was reminded this time around to just, like, really lean into that a lot more and just document this process a lot more.
So good. Ah, I love it, man. Thank you so much, Jeff, for taking this time. Yeah,
I think, man,
it's going to be this is a long extended episode, and I think it's going to be really, really helpful for, like I said, demystifying the space and really creating a lot of confidence, I think, for dads that are stepping in to be new dads or for recurring dads. Such a gift, man. Sure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Dads are better than moms. That's better than moms. Dads are better than mommy, sorry.